Hi friends, happy Friends of France Tuesday. Welcome back to another episode. I hope you have been enjoying our season so far and its episodes and topics. As you know, we have been mostly talking about traditional Chinese medicine the first few episodes, alongside its modalities of acupuncture and qigong. And last week, we had a three-part episode on that. Qigong and also yoga and Reiki. Well, let's delve deeper into the roots of yoga in today's episode. I know you heard about my insufferable hot yoga experience last week. Well, we'll talk about an ancient practice of medicine reaching far back to 5,000 years ago, which shares the same root as yoga, and that is Ayurvedic medicine, or Ayurveda. To be honest, I had no idea what Ayurveda was until about 2 years ago during an influencer brand event. I was invited to the launch event of Squiggs Beauty, a hair care brand founded by the lovely Nikita Charuza. So Squiggs is known for its award-winning Gooseberry Delight Hydrating Shampoo and Conditioner, which I love alongside its hair oil. I use it every day. Squiggs is founded on Ayurvedic ingredients and had the opportunity to discuss this with Nikita and learn a great deal about Ayurvedic principles. But what is Ayurveda? Why is it called the science of life? What are doshas? What is panchakarma? What is ashwagandha and turmeric that we hear about everywhere? Well, you're in today for an adventure to learn about all things Ayurveda in this episode. So I did while recording it with our expert guest for today. I am so honored to be joined by Nisha Saini, the founder and director of New York Ayurveda and Panchakarma Center, founded in 2006. Wow, over 20 years ago. Nisha is also a certified holistic health practitioner, an Ayurvedic health counselor and Panchakarma specialist, a licensed holistic esthetician, and she has been featured on Vogue and NPR. Okay, icon. Okay, are you ready? Let's go learn about all things Ayurveda. Enjoy! We long for what's natural, yet often hide it with layers. And today's soap market is no different, crowded with products that are harsh and overly processed. Born in Seoul, South Korea, Chai Minu was made to bring things back to something simpler, something intentional. Each handcrafted bar of soap is cold processed in small batches, using only natural oils and botanical powders. It is then cured and air dried for over 1,000 hours, letting the bar harden naturally for a gentler feel and a longer life. It all began with a mother searching for relief for her son's sensitive skin and her refusal to settle for harsh liquid soaps or quick-made bars. Let your skin experience the byproduct of patience, simplicity, and a mother's love for 15% off at shybinu.com. That's shybinu.com with the code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Friends of France podcast. And today I am so honored to introduce our guest and to learn more about the topic we're going to talk about today. I am so honored to have Nisha on. Nisha, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Christian. I'm so honored to be here. I appreciate it.
Of course. Can you tell us more about yourself and New York Ayurveda, which we'll also learn more about?
I grew up in India in a small state called Himachal Pradesh. It's the northern region of Himalayas. And I grew up in like a very small village, the beginning of my life. And lifestyle was very natural. I remember how I started Ayurveda. I was bald. I had very few hair that someone could count. And kids will bully me. I mean, if we talk about the modern terms, it was bullying if I relate back. And I will cry and I will be very shy. I will not go outside. I just school and home. And my father noticed how it bothers me emotionally as a child. So my father was a civil engineer. He will go in the, you know, villages for his work. And he happened to meet one Ayurvedic Vaidya in one of the villages who was a very learned man. Old person. And of course, my father spoke about my problem and he said, okay, let's take a look. So that's where my journey started. And I was treated by that Ayurvedic Vaidya. And I still remember it was a very natural way. I'll visit that place and finally herbs and diet change and all that involved, my hair came back.
I love that. And how did that lead from you founding New York Ayurveda, which I guess your experience with Ayurveda as a kid impacted you so much that you founded New York Ayurveda? Can you tell us more about the founding story and the inspirations behind it?
So yes, it didn't stop just in getting my hair. It was like such an emotional transformation for me. My view about myself or how I mix with other people, it all changed. And, you know, throughout my life, it stayed with me. I was about 7-8 years when that thing happened. But I became interested and on my own, I will learn. And I started having regular visits with that Vaidya, even for something else was going on wrong or in our family. So that became like a family thing. And I will learn from him. I took extra courses apart from my other studies. So fast forward, when I came to New York, I met a few people who were practicing yoga. You know, you meet your own type of people wherever you go. And we'll just have discussion. I'll say, oh, okay, you should start something in Ayurveda. And, you know, one of my friends took me to one of the natural spas at that time, about 20-something years back. And I went there with her and I saw that. And they were using organic and essential oils and stuff. It was a good thing. But I personally felt there was nothing Ayurveda. Actually. And from there, it just, you know, like that there is a very big gap that needs to be filled. If yoga is so popular in the West and you can't leave Ayurveda behind because they really assist each other. So I started with bringing some herbs and some Ayurvedic teas from India. And then after a few years, I felt like there is a still very big gap about Ayurvedic treatments, therapies, and more people are looking for that. Like relaxation is something people are looking on daily basis, especially in a city like New York. That's what came in my mind. Like therapies are going to be the biggest help for the people in my community.
Yeah. And you started New York Ayurveda in 2006. Is that correct?
I started in 2004.
2004.
Then I gave a little bigger form to it in 2006.
Wow. So it's been two decades of amazing work and changing lives and I guess educating the mess, especially here in New York City, of what Ayurveda is. And that is exactly what we're going to talk about next. Because to be honest with you, as someone who grew up here and as a nurse myself working in Western medicine, I didn't really know much about medicine and healing therapies outside of the United States. You know, when I was blueprinting the new season, the reason why I wanted to talk more about more traditional forms of medicine is I realized that America is a little bit selfish when it comes to medicine. We think we are always right and we're the only ones. And then it just so happens that I realize, oh my gosh, there's a world outside of this sphere of Western medicine. And one of them is Ayurveda, because to be honest with you, I actually didn't hear about Ayurveda until just a few years ago. And it's quite interesting you mentioned hair. There's a brand called Squiggs Beauty, founded by Nikita. And it was founded by, I believe, the principles of Ayurveda. They have a product called gooseberry oil. It's more of like a hair oil. I was talking with the founder, Nikita, and I was like, I have no idea what Ayurveda means. And that's when I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much I don't know. And I'm sure there's so many people like me. So Nisha, with your experience and roots in Ayurveda from you were so young and opening New York Ayurveda over 20 years ago, we're leading to your expertise. What is Ayurveda? How do you explain Ayurvedic medicine to someone who's probably never heard of it before like me?
Well, in a very layperson's language, I will say Ayurveda, the meaning of Ayurveda is science of life. It's a combo word, Ayurveda. Ayur means life. Veda means wisdom. When you put together, it can say it's science of life or wisdom about life or science about longevity. How can we experience Ayurveda in an easy way? I will say live in harmony with nature. Do not try to beat nature, because we will never be able to beat nature. For example, for a layperson again, living according to the seasons, cold weather, hot weather, spring, fall, things are going to change. You know, our internal system is affected by the outer system. Our internal environment of the body and mind is affected by external environment. That does not mean only the season, but even the food, noises, sounds, people, rain or sun. it's all affecting us. So Ayurveda, to practice it, I will say live in harmony with nature, follow the rhythm of the day, follow the rhythm of the seasons, rhythm of the time. And doshas are very important in Ayurveda. Again, that's a Sanskrit word. So science of Ayurveda is based on five elements: space, air, fire, water, earth. These five elements in Ayurvedic science, we say everything that we notice in the world happening or existing, it's created out of these five elements. What is predominant, what is missing, but it's something of these five elements that's forming anything living or non-living. And then from these five elements, we have three doshas. Space and air element form vata. Again, there is no English word for this. It's V-A-T-A. Vata, I will explain in a bit. Then second dosha is pitta, P-I-T-T-A. Pitta is fire and water combination. Then we have third dosha called kapha, K-A-P-H-A. That's a combination of water and earth. So when we know our dosha, when I understand what is my dosha, it's very easy to lead a life in balance. And when we are practicing Ayurveda in our clinic, our first effort is to explain to the person what is their dosha and what are they prone to and why they should live their life always focused on how to keep their dosha in balance. Because I may be kapha dominant person, other person may be pitta dominant, or other one vata dominant. All doshas have particular diseases or imbalances that will come from there. So if I understand what is my dosha and I live my life according to that, for example, I eat the foods which keep my dosha in check, which keep my doshas in balance, my body will be able to resist sickness and have a better immune system. And so on for any other dosha person. We all have all three doshas, all the functions in our body. So kapha dosha is structure in the body. It binds. It binds and it's expansion. For example, the childhood stage of the life is kapha stage of life. Mm. When a person is growing, kids are eating, they need proper nourishment. You cannot keep them undernourished. You know, parents are figuring out what works for them, what does not work for them. Mind, body, every way. If a parent knows what dosha of my child, it's very easy to give them a balanced life, body, mind, consciousness, every bit. So then comes pitta stage of life. That's the adult age from 15, 16 to 50 something. When we are in the pitta stage of life and it's like transformation, you know, we have expanded, we have the structure of the body and we have developed certain thoughts and how we think and look at the things. And now with our fire in the body and mind, we have enough energy and intelligence and wisdom. And we are focused on studies, and then we are focused on figuring out what we are going to attain in our life. And we are very focused on research or politics or whatever, whatever. We all have different things, pursuits in life that we are going to attain at that age. And then the vata stage of life. Vata is space and air element. And when we look at the space and air element, it's cold, it's mobile, dry. So vata stage of life is when our oils, natural oils and juices in our body are drying up. And if we know this is the vata stage of life, no matter what your dosha was, this is going to happen because the skin starts getting dry. We start getting more worrisome or anxious. And, you know, so many changes are happening at that time. It becomes more fragile, joint pains. But if we understand, I'm entering into vata stage of life, so we can take better options in our life and we can change our diet or lifestyle, spirituality, or whatever helps us.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for explaining all of that. That is so interesting. And I think it really beautifully sums up, I guess, the concept of Ayurveda, you know, from the five elements that you mentioned and the doshas. And I think it also answers my questions too when it comes to the medicine aspect of Ayurveda of, you know, I guess there is kind of a pattern or kind of an expectation of what disease or conditions are expected depending on that stage of life and the dosha, right? I also love how you mentioned that basically Ayurveda for the layperson, it roots in harmony. It kind of reminds me of from our guest who talked about traditional Chinese medicine, where they also talk about balance and harmony as well regarding the chi. I see kind of like this symbiosis across different schools of thoughts when it comes to harmony. I'm curious though, when it comes to the history of Ayurveda, and you mentioning that basically the definition or what it means is science of life, do you see Ayurveda more of its history reading from science or more from religion?
So there's two schools of thought. One is that it was some, you know, divine energy that sages went into meditation and they saw something and they chanted it. And then some people started recording it. That's one school of thought. We don't have any evidence of it. But then thousands of years back, there was another school of thought that there were two. And it's possible that it just keep coming and evolving. And maybe from the first school of thought, the second school of thought came. And then there were more modern view of that time. And then there were two main parts. One was more focused on anatomy and disease, pathology, looking at disease from each and every body part or dosha basis. And the other part was surgery. There was one part was physicians, one part was surgeons. So surgery, that's what we say in Ayurveda, it originated in Ayurveda. So even thousands of years back when disease was happening and surgery was required, for example, someone has ulcer or abscess or something, so surgery was performed. Of course, the surgery in the modern world is so advanced that we want to take advantage of that. There is no competition anymore because Ayurveda stayed back over there. There was not much advancement in surgery when it comes to, but other part of the Ayurveda, the anatomy and disease was very, very progressive even at that time. Going back to your question, like how it came into existence, how it evolved. So earlier, it was like written on the leaf through chanting. They were recording in mind or on the paper. Slowly as the evolution happened and, you know, more advancement came, more and more books were written. There are Vedas in Ayurveda, four main Vedas. And then Ayurveda came, which is said to be a sub-Veda. Because it's its own Veda, because it's so vast and so much information, it could not be kept as a sub-Veda. So there is all this information that's put in Ayurveda, and where you can look at diseases coming in this season, diseases coming from this imbalance, diseases that can happen because you ate this, and what herbs can be used, how mind can be used, how your environment can be used. In Ayurveda, we say disease comes from mind and the body and unknown reason. Unknown reason, for example, there was COVID. It was not just because of my dosha or because of my mind, right? Or it can be sudden, you know, epic of anything. But disease can form from the mind or from the body. From the body, when we are not living in harmony with nature. And then there is misuse of intellect, or when we know that this is my dosha and this is what I'm doing and I know it's wrong. It does not work for me, but I'm still doing it and I know what are the consequences. In my mind, I already know. But I'm not applying it, but I'm aware this will cause it. So that's where the disease is happening. That's the first stage of disease formation. It may not show up tomorrow, but let's say a person of Kapha dosha, earth and water element predominant dosha, and that person is prone to sluggishness, prone to stomach problems, respiratory problems. That person keep eating pastries, lethargic life, right? So the person with Kapha dosha needs stimulation all the time, needs more heating and warming food. We have to keep our inner system at certain temperature. Let's say it's a Pitta person whose digestive fire can be very high. So the goal in that person's body is to keep it at the balanced level. For the Kapha person, it can be very sluggish fire. So that means we need to stimulate the digestive fire there. Right? In a Vata person, the fire in the body can be very scanty. There is no structure of it. So in that case, you have to keep your mind and body both applying the science of Ayurveda to keep the digestive fire in place.
Sometimes all it takes is a spark. Something crisp, bold, and refreshingly different. That's where Sanzo Sparkling Water comes in. Founded by Queens-born Filipino-American Sandro Rocco, Sanzo has a simple goal, to bridge cultures and invite communities to explore and celebrate bold Asian flavors by celebrating unique Asian fruits, made with the real fruits themselves, clean ingredients, 100% natural sweeteners, and without artificial additives. Whether these flavors are a taste of home or a source of discovery, Sanzo is excited to bring you authentic flavors in the most delicious way they know how. So go ahead, pick your fruit, lychee, yuzu, mandarin, and much more, and get 10% off your first order at drinksanzo.com. That's drink, S-A-N-Z-O.com, with the code FRANZ10. That's FRANZ10. Valid until December 14, 2025, and limited to one use per customer. What if your night out could come with a smarter tomorrow? Meet Dayguard, a Korean-inspired functional jelly stick designed to support liver health, hydration, gut balance, and vitamin replenishment when drinking alcohol. With science-backed ingredients like DHM, L-cysteine, prickly pear extract, L-arginine, and B vitamins, each convenient and delicious stick helps your body break down alcohol and reduce next-day sluggishness. Just take one stick before your first drink of the night and support your body's natural recovery so you can wake up refreshed. Get 10% off your first purchase at dayguard.com, that's dayguard.com, with the code FRANZ, that's FRANZ. One-time use and cannot be combined with other codes.
You know, from everything that you're saying, one of the things that keeps ringing in my ears is when you said someone in general living through the seasons, and you're talking about harmony, and it seems like Ayurveda kind of proposes this sense of kind of this order and balance throughout every day, throughout every year, and living with nature. And I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, is this also in line with the concept of Dinacharya, which is daily routines? And if so, can you explain that concept to us? I guess, what are the common routines in Ayurveda?
So Dinacharya is like the basic of our life. I personally say that's consistency. No matter where you are in your life, at what stage you are, consistency is the first step towards balanced body and mind. If I'm waking up today at 4 p.m. and tomorrow at 6 a.m., third day, I'm certainly broken. My body does not understand who I am and what I'm doing. So the Dinacharya is very important. For example, wake up time, and it can be a little bit different for different people. For example, Kapha people should not sleep too much. Pitta people should have moderate sleep. Vata people should sleep as much as they can because their mind can be triggering. So when it comes to Dinacharya, what time you wake up? What's the first thing you do in the day? There are Vata, Pitta, Kapha times of the day. 2 to 6 a.m. or p.m. is the Vata time of the day or night. 2 to 6 a.m. or 2 to 6 p.m. Then 6 to 10 a.m. or 6 to 10 p.m. is the Kapha time of the day or night. That means those doshas are dominant at that time of the day. And then 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. or 10 p.m. 2 a.m. is the Pitta dosha time. So when it comes to Dinacharya, it's very important what we are doing at what time. So when it comes to exercise, very important and interesting, Kapha time of the day, 6 to 10 a.m. Ayurveda, we say that's the time to stimulate your body when it comes to exercise. But you'll see people are doing it any time of the day. It will bring some imbalance. I see it in my practice all the times. People just do anything, anytime. Pitta and Vata is going to be imbalanced when you are exercising at the wrong time of the day. Or it may not be very effective for your body and mind if you're doing it at the wrong time of the day. So exercise has to happen in the morning Kapha time. Then your breakfast. In the modern world, we say breakfast is very important for every day. Ayurveda does not agree with this. What's your body type? It's very important to understand what's your body type. For Kapha people, you can literally escape breakfast. That's the time to stimulate your body. You know, when you're doing the fasting, basically you're stimulating your system. Mm-hmm. You're bringing up your digestive fire. But at the same time, if you tell Vata and Pitta person to do the fasting, they will go crazy. They will either get very hangry or anxious or headache or something wrong. So understanding what's your body type and following the Dinacharya is important. Then we go to the daytime. You know, daytime, you do your work, you go to school. in the evening, when it comes to dinacharya, you want to wrap up your day. You want to get into the calm down mode, take a shower or rinse or wash your feet, especially if you're a vata or pitta person. You want to do a little foot massage. Eat according to your dosha. Eat 3 hours before you go to bed. Does not matter what your body type is. And Ayurveda says you must sleep before 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. I understand people have different jobs and circumstances, but Ayurvedically speaking, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. That's the pitta time when your digestive fire is adjusting according to the need of your body. And that's when the detox is happening automatically in our system. And if you're missing that window, you cannot replace at 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. There's no replacement. Just like stimulation of the body has to happen in the kapha time, same way our natural detox of the body has to happen between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. It's a very important window for our natural detox, and the system is trying to fill that gap that we missed in the day. Even if we miss something in the day, it's trying to bring it back.
Yeah. So what I'm getting is I'm doing a lot of things wrong. But, you know, you were mentioning about detox, and I really wanted to talk about this because I feel like nowadays detox is such a huge word and buzzword. But I know that this has been a concept that's, I guess, built in Ayurveda as well for the past thousands of years. You know, your center name is New York Ayurveda and Panchakarma Center, right? Can you tell us more about this concept of Panchakarma, which I guess, if correct me if I'm wrong, is related to the concept of detoxing?
Sure. So I will start with two concepts. There is malnutrition and there is overnutrition. Mm. Tell me what's happening more right now in the world. Malnutrition, let's talk about America. Diseases are mostly coming from overconsumption than malnutrition. Mm-hmm. So you hear detox a lot here. You will not hear detox in poor countries because they are undernourished, right? So in the Western world, or even in India, food is like Thanksgiving every day. And it's not only food. There is so much. We are overconsumption of almost everything. Overconsumption of information, technology, food, noise, all five senses we are overusing. So detox is really important here. So Panchakarma is Ayurvedic procedure of detox. And Panchakarma is again a Sanskrit word, means pancha plus karma means five and actions. Pancha means five and karma means actions. So five actions does not mean everybody has to get those five actions. Then there are so many sub actions also. So when you're doing Panchakarma, it's not only those five actions, but there are so many other actions as well. That means therapies. In this context, actions means therapies or treatments. So when you're doing the detox, that means whatever was over consumed, we want to get rid of that to bring someone in balance. For example, in case of Vata, it's too much space and air element, and all the problems are coming from there. So it can be constipation, it can be anxiety, just over worrying, overthinking, over fearful. So when the mind is working in a negative way, there are problems coming in the body from that as well, right? In case of kapha, there will be a lot of metabolism-related problems because they always have something going on about that. System is already sluggish, and in this modern world, you're doing overconsumption. There is no room for overconsumption in kapha body, but it still happens. And then in pitta case, overconsumption means like you are eating wrong foods, over spicy food, overworked, over screen time, too much traveling. So all that is creating toxins in the body. It's not only food, it's your thought process, your mind, how you used all your five senses that's bringing in toxins, and then you need to detox. So that's why the detox is such a buzzword in the modern world.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And you're right, there is so much overconsumption of so many things, especially here in America. I feel like even in New York, right? The noise when you're running outside, everyone is going here and there. And especially nowadays with the era of social media, the amount of information. And you're right, detox is so important. And I wanted to touch upon also one of the earlier things you mentioned is you bringing herbs from India into the United States and your journey of starting Ayurveda here. And I wanted to relate this into another concept that you were talking a lot about is when it comes to food and diet. So when it comes to herbal remedies, there were two things that so many people sent me questions about, and you were the right person to answer these for us. Oh. We've been hearing about this herb everywhere, and I feel like it's in every supplement right now. Ashwagandha, is this rooted in Ayurveda? What is it helpful for? How is it best prepared and taken according to Ayurvedic practices?
Okay, so when it comes to ashwagandha, you know, every food, everything that we put in our mouth, Ayurveda also talks about six tastes: sweet, sour, salty, astringent, bitter, pungent. Every herb, every food, the liquids, they have some taste. So that's a vast topic, but I will keep it concise here. So ashwagandha is a traditional Ayurvedic herb, is mostly grown in Himalayas, and now there is modern farming also of it. So the actions of ashwagandha herb are rejuvenative, nervine, and sedative. So for example, when you're doing a detox, you're not going to take this herb, because during detox, you're trying to expel the bad stuff, and taking ashwagandha at that time has no meaning because it's a rejuvenative. So this will come after the detox. And detox, you're not on detox all the time. You're doing certain period of detox. But other than that, and who can take it? Almost every body type can take it, but it's especially very beneficial for vata and kapha. For pitta person, you will hear from some people, oh, if I take ashwagandha, I feel a little strange and dizzy and this and that. So when pitta person is over consuming ashwagandha, they are going to feel a little shaken. So how much you're taking, what's your body type, what's your current symptoms, how strong you are at your immune system, how resistant your body is, that will be all very, very important. It's especially helpful for, you know, people who have energy loss or a little debilitated. It's a very good herb for anti-aging, especially women at menopause stage or later, or people in vata stage of life. It's a very good rejuvenative herb you can take on daily basis. I will say always consult your Ayurvedic practitioner. It depends what other herbs or medicines you're taking. So you have to be a little mindful. Just don't go on Dr. Google Help. That will be not advised. But always have a practitioner to guide you. Ayurveda can be a little tricky when it comes to help from the internet, because you have to understand what's your dosha, what is your current symptom, what is your current constitution as well, what stage of life you are on, and what other herbs you're taking. So you have to keep in mind. So I will say always consult a practitioner before taking the herb and how much doses you should be taking. Mm.
Yeah, I love that. And the other one is turmeric. Is this also rooting in Ayurveda as well?
Turmeric is a like talked about, I don't know. There's no one who does not talk about turmeric. It's a warming herb, right? When it comes to herbs in Ayurveda, they are cooling herbs, they are warming herbs, they are like herbs for rejuvenation or detox or so many things. So when it comes to turmeric, it has taste bitter, astringent, and pungent. Most herbs which have bitter, astringent, pungent tastes, they are mostly kapha balancing herbs. So this is a very good herb for kapha balancing. When it comes to vata and pitta, if not taken in proper doses, it can increase vata and pitta. So you have to be mindful what's your dosha type and how you're taking it is very important. I will say you should take, the preferred way of taking turmeric is cooked warm. So when we are getting the herbs in the powder form, for example, we have products which are, in modern day, we call them turmeric lattes. You heard of it, right? It can be a plain formulation with some coconut powder and spices and turmeric. So that's a very basic form of turmeric drink. At the same time, you can also make it more herbal by adding some other herbs. For example, it can be ashwagandha or brahmi or so on. And that way, we can customize the consumption of turmeric. Like what else you're adding with it to make it more appropriate for certain dosha. But turmeric in general, I will say it's a very good digestive herb. It's very good for respiration. It's very helpful for joint problems, for mucus, throat. You know, when I was growing up in India, in our home, there was a little container where my mom will mix mustard oil and turmeric. And whenever we go outside, play, have some bruises, we just come like, okay, this is the medicine to go for. We apply like literally open wound and, you know, some scratches or whatever. So it will heal. It was, there will be some yellowish part of the body all the times.
Yeah.
It helps on bruises a lot and anti-inflammatory for sure. And it's a very good herb for aid the protein digestion. So when you're cooking a food that's heavy on, in protein and you add some turmeric in that, it's very helpful in digest because it protein digestion take little toll on the body to add few things that. So in Ayurveda or in Indian cooking, turmeric is a very important part.
What if your home could feel more like you? Meet Emmy, a New York-based home fragrance brand founded in 2020 by Erica and Mark. Inspired by the scents they grew up with, like steamed rice, tropical fruits, and temple incense, Emmy celebrates fragrance as memory, culture, and ritual. From design-forward candles to reed diffusers and hand soaps, each product is crafted with clean ingredients, wood wicks, and thoughtful formulations. More than scent, Emmy creates atmosphere and belonging. Storytelling in wax, in water, in air. So whether it's lighting a candle or washing your hands, small rituals are transformed into something intentional, making your space warm, alive, and entirely yours. Get 15% off at emmenyc.com. That's emmenyc.com with code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. Find your story, find your atmosphere, find it with Emmy. Do you get red after a sip of alcohol? Well, I do, and it actually has a name, the alcohol flush reaction. And in my case, the infamous Asian glow. But something I didn't realize is that Asian glow isn't just a cosmetic issue, it's a real health risk, linked to increased cancer risk and poor alcohol metabolism. Thankfully, Joyn is here to help. An AAPI and woman-founded supplement brand that was created to be the most effective natural solution to support people with alcohol flush and recovery, while boosting overall health. Made with clinically studied all-natural ingredients like glutathione, milk thistle, and B vitamins, you can now finally feel confident when you drink. Get 20% off your first order at jointhefun.com. That's jointhefun.com. With the code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. Let's give the Asian glow a different meaning.
One of the most important things when it comes to practices and culture, and to me, is food. I'm curious, is there an ideal or recommended diet rooted in Ayurvedic concepts? Or would you say it would be like dosha dependent based on what we're talking?
So Ayurveda will always be talking everything about doshas. Let's say it's a fall season coming up now, and that means it's windy and cold and dry. So everybody's diet should be more towards cooked food and warm food, more like grounding food. It doesn't matter what your body type is, but again, if you are certain body type and you think you're already too stimulated or too grounded, so you can always adjust your food. For example, there are so many root vegetables in the winter season. And if kapha person has to eat them, that means you have to add a lot of stimulating spices in that. But if it's only a vata person, they can have root vegetables whatever way they form, right?
I see. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, I've been learning so much. This is also interesting and definitely makes me want to read more and more about it. And
one it's of the endless.
I'm sure 20 years in or even practicing as a child, I'm sure you're learning so much more. And one of the last topics I wanted to talk about is this topic, which I guess can get a little controversial based on what I see in the forums and the internet, is when it comes to bhasmas, or I guess our purified metals. And can you explain to us what are bhasmas, what's their significance, or the usage of metals in Ayurvedic medicine? And I guess at the same time, especially here in the United States, how do we tackle the topic of metal toxicity within this branch of Ayurveda?
It's a very important subject, actually. I will say I personally do not prescribe anything with bhasmas. that's metals. We have received notices from the health department as well. I think especially in California and New York, there are regular notices. A few years back, we will get something almost every week. When it comes to Bussams, I think it was a very advanced drug that they will say in those days. In India, they even say like right now in America, we call everything is formulation or supplement. I personally feel I might be taken into troll for this, but Bhasam is something that should be coming from a very advanced level of teacher who knows your constitution on a very personal level and when it's absolutely needed. Because I'm not a pharmacology expert, but from my understanding, there has to be a very deep information of the patient that the practitioner should have. And when it comes to quality maintenance, I don't know how you can produce Bhasmas on a larger scale.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
Yeah.
I know it's available. There are very few companies who make it. I personally don't feel like I can give Bhasam from a company's bottle to a person.
I'm curious, what are the proposed benefits of these Bhasams for those who do practice?
It can be used for different reasons. There's a lot of Bhasams that are used for mind or for joints or even for digestion. For many chronic diseases, there are Bhasam like full, even mercury or iron, gold, silver. There are so many Bhasams. So Bhasam, what I have understood from my very old time Vedya is Bhasam is something, you know how fine our lines on the fingers are?
The fingerprint.
Fingerprints. How fine those lines are. When those Bhasams are made, they have to be so fine that they get stuck in our these lines.
They're usually ingested, like
it's,
eaten?
It's supposed to be ingested. They come in powder form, they come in tablet form or capsule form. I don't practice it.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know. Thank you so much for explaining that, though.
No problem.
You know, we've talked a lot now about herbs and even the metals and, you know, living through the seasons and detox. And I wanted to bring it all the way back to when you were first describing and defining Ayurveda, which means the science of life. And, you know, nowadays, like you mentioned, there is so much more advanced, I guess, forms of surgery. And even within, I guess, Western medicine, the modern science, all of this evidence-based studies and all of this lab-based studies, given that Ayurveda is known as the science of life, how do you think we can harmonize Ayurvedic medicine with the topic of Western medicine and modern science? Can they coexist harmoniously, you think?
I think when we apply integrated approach, both sciences work so beautifully. Mm-hmm. You can't compete one with another. Mm-hmm. So for example, Western medicine is so good for symptomatic relief. For example, I am in severe pain from chronic back pain or any kind of pain, let's say, or cancer, let's say. You know, you need symptomatic relief at that moment. So Ayurveda will take time, yoga will take time, my breathing exercise will take time. But if I keep that person or myself in pain for so long, the disease is taking like progressive mode. The more pain we take, it's just harming, especially the mind. Mm-hmm. And that mind further reflects in the body. So I will say modern science is so good for symptomatic relief and for surgery and for testing as well. There are such advanced testing in India, in the Ayurvedic medicine, many places are working together. And in my practice also, we want to look at somebody's blood work or any scanning that did. It helps us create the whole protocol for the treatment. So I will say there is no competition. They both can be used in harmony with each other instead of competing with each other.
Yeah, I love that so much. And as my last question, and again, this has been such a beautiful conversation. Thank you. Over the decades that you've experienced Ayurvedic medicine and all of its, you know, ways of life for yourself and now helping so many people experience it themselves, if you could pass along one teaching from Ayurveda that has most transformed your own life, I know this might be hard, what do you think it would be?
Yeah, telling one thing is really hard. I will say two things.
Yes, yes, let's do it.
You can edit it. I will say follow Dinacharya that works for your body type. That's one thing. If you do that, that takes care of so many other problems. But if it's just one thing to follow in a day, I will say learn the breathing exercise. Start your day with that. It can be different breathing exercise for different doshas, but one breathing exercise that can work for everybody is like Just deep inhale, deep exhale, focus between the brows, sit quiet and listen to the sound of your breath. You don't need any music, just escape the noise outside, just silence and the sound of your breath. And take 10 to 20 breaths, or if longer you can, but when you feel you can't do anymore, stop when you can't do it anymore. But that will certainly set you for a better experience of the day, more focused, less anger, less worry.
And I think that's so important, and that's what we all need, especially in this very busy and a very hectic and crazy world that we live in. Nisha, thank you so much. Can you please tell everyone where they could find New York Ayurveda and how to contact you?
Sure. Our business name, New York Ayurveda and Panchakarma Center. And our website is www.nyayurveda.com. We are located in a very easy location, 1 West 34th Street, Suite 902, New York. It's right across Empire State Building.
Yes, that's amazing. Oh, Nisha, thank you so much. I am so honored.
I appreciate it. I hope people will learn from something from it and we spread some word about Ayurveda. I appreciate having me with you. It was a pleasure talking to you.